Professor Yohanan Aharoni from Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And by the way, I might say, if I might interrupt myself for a moment, that those of you who are sitting further back, if you find difficulty hearing, we'll be glad to have you move up closer. This happens to be the only spot, I'm told by Professor Johnson, in the whole chapel, which is practically dead acoustically, so we tried to set up a situation here by the microphone to amplify what is said, but if you have difficulty hearing, you just feel free to move to some point other in the chapel where you can hear better, okay? Professor Aharoni is, in my judgment and the judgment of many other people, the most outstanding field archaeologist at work today in the world in the field of biblical archaeology and historical geography. He is the author of many responsible books. Two beautiful books by him on the digs at Ramat Rachel are in our library. A more recent work of his in Hebrew, which has just been translated by Anson Rainey, a young Baptist from California, now resident in Israel, is to be titled in English, The Land of the Bible, A Historical Geography. It will be available for seminaries and other institutions and individuals interested in the subject, I hope, by September. It's being published by Westminster. And many other works which someday will be available to us, I'm sure. The past few years, his interests and talents have been directed at one of the most important tells in the southern section of Palestine, the tell called Arad. And on Tuesday we saw something of this tell and some of the inscriptions, the ostraca ink inscriptions found there. Today we're going to see something of the temple or the holy place, the worship house, and some related things. And we very gladly welcome again to this chapel and to this seminary community Professor Yohanan Aharoni. He did bring his lovely lady with him today, and I hope you'll have a chance to meet her after this chapel program this morning. Professor Aharoni, welcome.
Really, perhaps the most surprising find which we had at our last three seasons at Arad was the sanctuary, the temple, if you want to call it like this. And you probably will understand our surprise if you take into consideration that never before any sanctuary of this period, of the Israeli period, has been found in any excavation in Palestine. It has even been doubted if there existed any in Judea, outside of Jerusalem, outside of the Solomonic Temple. And these temples which existed in northern Israel, of which we have any knowledge in the Bible, like the temple at Dan and Bet El, in any case, have not yet been found. And if you had asked me before our excavation at Arad what I was suspecting there and awaiting there, I would think that my last guess would have been then to find there Israeli sanctuary. I think, and let's start immediately with some of the photographs, first be able to show you how this sanctuary looked like, what we found in it, why we are quite safe and sure that it is not only a sanctuary from the Israeli period, but that it is a real, true Israeli sanctuary to the God of Israel. And then let's discuss or ask only briefly how to explain this surprising find just at Arad. As you remember, this royal fortress, not very large, but very strongly fortified, on the southern or on the southeastern border of Judea. So please, let's start with the... Yes, I'm starting with this photograph. It is not from Arad. It is from Ramat Rachel. And you'll probably recognize Professor Elmus Kagan, who was one of our best assistants and worker during the excavation of Ramat Rachel in one of the tombs, the burial caves, which we had there. But I don't want, of course, to go on with Ramat Rachel. And let's start with the sanctuary at Arad. So was the a picture of the Holy of Holies, of the Dvir, of the sanctuary, as we found it just on the last day of the second season. You see here three steps leading up through this door into from the main room, from the Hechal, into the Dvir of the sanctuary. On both sides of the second step, two beautiful carved, small, probably libation or incense stone altars were laying like this, a small bama inside, and a stone laying here, probably one of these famous matzevot, pillars or seals, over which we hear so much in the Bible. Now this is the picture after we raised this altar and put them again on the spot which we think, which we believe, are not completely sure, that they were their original place at the entrance. As you see, in spite that they were laying like this on the second step, still on both of them there is an organic substance, burnt organic substance, doubtless traces of the last offerings burnt on them. And you see here this Matseva, now standing, with traces of red color still preserved on it. Now this is the general plan of the sanctuary. As you see, it's not just a small altar or bama or high place, but it's a quite substantial, relatively large building comprising the whole northwestern part of our royal citadel, which, reminding those which were in our previous lecture, wasn't very large, only about 50 to 50 meters large. You have here the general plan. First, the relatively large courtyard. In the corner of the courtyard, the large built altar for burnt offerings. Then through a step or a sill, you come into this first, again if you want, courtyard or room, into the second main room, and from here, what we have seen in the previous picture, through these three steps in the small cellar of the Holy of Holies. So at least immediately I think you recognize at least two quite basic things in the arrangement of this temple, which are similar to the Solomonic temple in Jerusalem, and perhaps also to the desert sanctuary, the biblical tabernacle. One is this main plan of courtyard, and then three rooms, one after the other, with a central doorway, the biblical Ulam, Hechal, and Dvir. And the second is the direction to the west. The north here is exactly to the upper side. So the Holy of Holies is to the west, the entrance from the east, exactly as we have it in the Solomonic Temple. This is the altar, which we saw in the corner of the courtyard. You see here a large stone, flint stone, which probably served for the offerings, surrounded by two plastered gutters or channels. If we look at the altar from the other side, you can recognize perhaps better how it was built of small, very small unhewn stones. And according with the biblical law, that the altar should not be touched by iron and not be built with dressed stones. Please look at the wall after it, which is built mainly of well-dressed, of course, with iron tool dressed stones, and you see quite well here the difference, which hardly can be just accidental. Then please look to another fact. This altar, as of course the sanctuary itself, was destroyed and rebuilt several times with the destruction of our citadel at Arad. Now of course, we could suppose that the sanctuary and everything which was in it was always rebuilt as far as possible and as near as possible to the previous plan. But you see very well, the first altar, which you have here, is about 1 foot shorter than the later altars. And this thing, which you can see quite clearly here, and was at the beginning a surprising, very surprising fact for us, has become a quite interesting fact, and we'll immediately return to it. Now, something of the contents of the findings in the sanctuary itself. We found a few quite crude offering tables or stones like this. I would advise everybody of you better to look and to work in a Hellenistic, in a Roman, or even in a Canaanite a sanctuary. It is much richer, you find much more objects of art than in an Israeli sanctuary like this. I am always arguing that even a statue of God you don't find in our sanctuary. Well, now I have no, it is difficult to explain the usage of any one of these probably offering stone tables, one perhaps for the showbread, which we know in the Bible, and every detail of course has to be studied, and I'm sure that with the biblication many scholars will have their ideas and make their contribution to the understanding of what we have, yes, in the sanctuary. We have at least fragments of an incense burner, clay incense burner, similar to those known from other places. Our, I would say, only real object of art is this small bronze figurine of a crouching lion. It's about 2 inches long, a votive figurine found near the altar in one of its phases. Also, well, this was found really in the Holy of Holies, a ring, still with the ring itself, the seal attached to the ring, but unfortunately, and it's very rare, made not of stone, but made of iron, the ring too, and therefore the symbol which was on it is very eroded, and I won't go here into its possible explanation. Some offering bowls, pottery bowls, on one of the lower phases of the altar. They are quite unusual bowls, unusual to the period, and were probably a special type used only for this purpose. On two of them, as you see, smaller one and very shallow one, beautiful, burnished, there are two identical or almost identical inscribed signs. The first one, identical on both, is a clear ancient biblical kof, the letter kof in ancient Hebrew. The second one, as you see, is a little bit different here and here, where the middle stroke goes through these two other strokes. It resembles a bit a later Aramaic sheen, but it is much too early here to be interpreted, to be interpreted as a sheen. It could be an archaic kaf, but it looks also in these two different versions a bit difficult, and I'm more inclined to think now that the second one is rather a symbol and not a letter. In any case, however we explain these two symbols, remember that they come from two identical offering bowls on the altar, and of course their explanation must have something to do with this purpose of the offering at the altar in the sanctuary. Now let's look once again to the plan, and let's look at two important things for the dating of our temple. As you see, the Holy of Holies is not built against this large solid 9th century wall, but is built against the 10th century casemate wall, which is to be seen below it. So it became quite clear that even beside our strata inside the sanctuary and in the citadel, even from the point of the architecture, that the sanctuary was built and erected and planned together with the first citadel at Arad, that means in the 10th century, probably by Solomon. I'm showing you this sketch the other way round. Yes, the Holy of Holies now to the upper side. Again, you see here, well, here you have the different phases. I won't go into details. You see again how this Holy of Holies is built against the earlier and not against the 9th century wall. But I want here to point to another very interesting fact. As you see it here in the later phase which we have of the sanctuary, the main room, the Hechal, is not symmetrical. You see here that the Holy of Holies, the Dvir, is not in the middle. Here the axis, the doors, are quite distinctly farther to the left of the sanctuary. We were quite astonished about this fact until we get down and worked our way to the earliest phase of the 10th century sanctuary, and we suddenly discovered that the earliest wall was here at this phase, and you immediately see that at the beginning it was symmetrical. This room of the Echal was really shorter, and then in the second phase, in the 9th century, this already quite narrow and broad and long room, like it is, was again made longer on this side by about 5 feet, now becoming asymmetrical. And again, we'll immediately return to this fact, but first let's look at the destruction of the sanctuary. This has been also very clear and dotless. You see here the line of the casemate wall, which is the last citadel, last Iron Age, last Israeli citadel at Arad, belonging to the latter part of the 7th century. You see here very clearly how this inner casemate wall cuts the sanctuary into pieces. Well, clearly destroys it completely. On the left side, you have here the Holy of Holies once again. On the right side, you have this is in the middle of the main room. You have the ulam, the courtyard with the altar. And please look into one thing. I forgot to mention it in the plan of the sanctuary. At the entrance here, from the first room, the ulam, into the now by this wall destroyed, or many destroyed, main room, the Hechal, we found on the two sides two stone slabs, very probably stone bases of freestanding columns, which you see are no part of the wall itself, but are before the wall and are probably to be compared with the biblical Yachin and Boaz. These two freestanding columns adorning the entrance to the temple. Here you have again this plan of the citadels. Again you see that our temple, which is here on this part of the citadel, please look to the plan. The gate was at the beginning here, but later was removed to this side. Through a corridor you came first to the magazine building here, and to another corridor to the temple on this side. Then you came into a courtroom. We don't know the exact extent of this courtroom, because this white spot here is a Hellenistic tower of a later period, which has destroyed everything. Has been digged down to bedrock, so this is an empty spot in our citadel, and you see that we are really lucky that they didn't build this Hellenistic tower, for instance, on this temple here. Then of course we wouldn't have found anything in any trace of it. And then you have the main dwellings and rooms of the citadel on this side. Now you see once again first how this sanctuary from the beginning takes a quite vital and large plan of this relatively small citadel, how it was built here against the green early 10th century Kazimet wall, and then how the latest blue Kazimet wall runs through it, disregarding, destroying it completely. And this last citadel, belonging, as I said, to the latter part of the 7th century, must probably be attributed to Josiah and his reforms of the concentration of worship in Jerusalem. Now, a last fact, interesting for the dating. You have again the picture of our altar. See again the early altar and the later one. What you have here is the last floor reaching the altar. So we, of course, found this lower one. We found floor level after floor levels reaching the altar. And became quite clear to us by, of course, an exact checking of the floor levels and when the altar was in use, that this altar was not in use up to the last sanctuary at the Tell. I remind you that we had at Arad 6 fortresses from Solomon to the destruction of the first temple. Now in our 6th and last fortress, the temple, as you saw, was already destroyed by the Kazimet wall. But even in the 5th fortress, before the last, in the 7th century, when the temple, the sanctuary, still stood, this altar was already buried. This floor, as you see it here, belongs to the 4th and not to the 5th and last temple. And on top of it, well, you can't see it in this picture, we found a clear other floor, non-altar, belonging to the last sanctuary. And again, I would say we have this fact, which is for the beginning very surprising. How is this possible at all, that now this last 7th century sanctuary at the place apparently hasn't anymore this large and dominating feature of the built altar for the burnt offerings? And finally, here's another seal. We saw in the last time a few small Hebrew seals. This, as you see, is a much larger and cruder one. On it, we have a quite strange puzzle, if you want it, on it. No inscription, with a deep hole on this side. But if we look at an impression on it here and compare this with a, let's say, schematical layout plan of our citadel, it becomes quite obvious that we have here a thing which I would say every archaeologist would dream to find it during, or perhaps even better, before his excavation. This artist, so it seems, made on his seal the main plan of our citadel in Arad. You see here this entrance, the magazine building, the temple even itself, the courtyard and the rooms of this side surrounded by the wall. And if you arc the courtyard in our drawing here is larger than in his, I suppose he is right. Because you remember, we really don't know what was the size of our courtyard, as it was destroyed almost completely by this Hellenistic tower. And finally, briefly try to discuss some of these aspects, let's look at a few comparisons, or earlier or perhaps contemporary comparison with our sanctuary. Here you have the famous Tel Tainat sanctuary of northern Syria. Again, you probably remember, like the Solomonic temple built near the palace, a part of the royal palace. And you see here these two pillars, the 1, 2, 3 room plan. This is perhaps the best and nearest comparison to the Jerusalem temple from the 8th century BC. Here, the drawing, at least, of the temple, the Canaanite temple of Hazor, which belongs to the 14th, 13th century, so Canaanite and about 300, 400 years earlier than the Solomonic temple. Again, you see this main plan of the 1, 2, 3 partitions with a central doorway. None of these, this one, usually point to the north, not to the west, like our temple in Arad, the Solomonic temple. And again, you have here these two pillars. This is the plan, well, it is enough of Tel Tainat. You have the similar feature of the biblical Yachin and Boaz, as you see always in these prototypes of the temple, in the first room and not before it. And finally, the common, that is the Watzinger reconstruction of the Solomonic temple in Jerusalem, according to the biblical description of, again, of course, of the 1, 2, 3 parts. Of course, you see immediately, and we'll immediately come to this, that this is a room, at least for the first look, seems to be very different in size and layout from our room, from our sanctuary at Arad. And you see here the reconstruction of these two large, high, according to the biblical description, beautifully adorned pillars, Yachin and Boaz, as you see almost anonymously by scholars, put like this before the sanctuary, or here in the of Wright's book, his reconstruction again with a reconstructed temple, and these two high free-standing columns before the entrance to the temple. May I have the light, please? Now, trying to sum off only the main questions or main problems which our sanctuary at Arad raises, I think what we have, and I did not show you once again the ostraca, which came also partly from the temple, from the sanctuary itself, and which I showed you on Tuesday, and among which we have these ostraca with priestly names of the name of Miremot and Pashur, with, if I think anybody has still any doubt, that here in the Judean royal citadel of Arad, we have a true Judean Beit Yahweh, as we have it in the ostraca, and not any foreign sanctuary. I think these priestly families in the ostraca really take any possible doubt out of it. So, of course, first, one of the most interesting things is the comparison of our sanctuary here, the first one really which we have, to the biblical descriptions of any sanctuaries, and we have only two descriptions, the description of the Solomonic temple in Jerusalem and the description of the tabernacle, the desert sanctuary. Now I showed already to some basic feature, which in any case think to be common and similar, both to the Solomonic Jerusalem temple and both to the tabernacle. The fourth part division of courtyard, Ulam, Echal, Dvir. The western direction. The altar built according to the biblical law of unhewn stones. We can go on and point to the size of the altar. Our built altar in the courtyard is exactly 5 to 5 cubits square. This is the size of the altar, of the biblical altar, of the tabernacle, of the desert sanctuary, not of the Solomonic, which a temple which was larger. In Exodus 27, and thou shalt make the altar 5 cubits long and 5 cubits broad. Coming to these two pillars, Yachin and Boaz. Well, at the first moment, you will perhaps ask, we have a difference here. Well, we have two bases of pillars, but at Arad, they don't stand before the whole building, before the first room, the Ulam, but as you saw, they stood inside the first room at the entrance to the second room, the Heichal. You have seen that in almost all, I think all, reconstruction of the Solomonic Temple, it is done in another way. These two columns are put before the first room in the courtyard, before the Ulam. Now you have seen also the prototypes which we have, and all the prototypes, the Canaanite prototypes, or Phoenician similar sanctuary like this one in Tel Tainat, if they have these columns, and they have been found at Chatzor, at Tel Achana Alalach, and at Tel Tainat, you have seen that they always are in the first room, at the entrance to the second, and never before the first room and the courtyard. So is this really a feature different in Jerusalem, in the Solomonic Temple, both from the Phoenician Canaanite prototypes, both from our Arad sanctuary, and a unique feature for itself? Let's look into the biblical passage. We have two descriptions of this. One in 1 Kings 7, 21, and he set up the pillars at the porch of the holy place. In Hebrew, Le'ulam Ha'echal. To the Ulam of the Heichal. Well, we want to know where he set them up, before the Ulam or before the Heichal. If anybody of you can explain this to me from the point of language, what this means, to the Ulam of the Heichal, in any case, it's not clear and you can't make anything safe and sure out of this. But in the book of Chronicles, the 2 Chronicles 3:17, and I think once again and again we are surprised of this basic material which is doubtlessly preserved in this latest book of the Bible, or one of the latest of Chronicles. We have in 2 Chronicles 3:17, and he set up the pillars before the holy place, al pnei ha'echal. Look into the commentaries, I think in most commentary it's just broken out and replaced by ulam. I would say, I see no reason for this for the moment whatsoever. And I had here in the States the opportunity to discuss this and other questions with scholars like Albright, Wright, and Cross, and others. And I asked them, please give me today one single argument why we have to place these two pillars before the Ulam and not in the Ulam and the entrance to the Heichal. So it is in Arad, so we have it in the prototypes, so we have it in the only clear biblical passage. And in any case, they didn't give me any answer for this. I would say I don't see today a single argument to put these two colors, columns as we have them before the temple. This means, if you understand, a quite severe reconstruction of the Jerusalem temple. Because if you put these large, high columns into the first room, much of the building has to be reconstructed in a different way. I agree that a lot of work has been put into these reconstructions as we have them, but I think that we have to think it over and to try to work it once again. Another, briefly, a bit technical matter, but also highly interesting, the size of our sanctuary, and I pointed already to the difference, or the first moment obvious difference, between the size of our broad room at Arad to the long room of the Heichal in Solomon's temple, which is 20 cubits broad and according to the biblical description, 40 cubits long. Now, well, you may of course ask, what is the length in cubits of our sanctuary in Arad? In order to give you an exact answer to this, we of course first must know what is the exact size of the ancient Hebrew cubit. And we don't know this. Never has been found in Palestine any measurement or any real evidence for the exact size measurement of the ancient Hebrew cubit. I think we can't believe or can't argue that cubit, of course, which is the measurement from elbow to middle finger, was just the measurement of the man, and if the worker would be small, the sanctuary would be small. If he would be large, so the temple or sanctuary would be large. It's hardly to believe that it was like this. There probably was a standard, but what was exactly the standard? So we know the ancient Hebrew cubit only from Egypt. And in Egypt we know it well, even measurements have been found. And surprisingly in Egypt, in this period and even earlier, there were two standards of the cubit. One is the so-called common or shorter cubit, which is about 1.5 foot long. And the other is the royal or longer cubit, which is about 5 inches longer, 52.5 centimeters. And now by measuring our main rooms and installations in the Arad sanctuary, I come to the surprising conclusion that at the beginning our Heichal, the main room, was exactly 20 lower, shorter Egyptian cubits long. 9 meters, that means exactly 20 shorter Egyptian cubits. And when it was enlarged in the second phase, in the 9th century, the difference now between the earlier and the later size is exactly the difference between the shorter and longer Egyptian standard of the cubit. When I saw this at the beginning in the Heichal, I was just surprised and thought maybe it is incidence. But then I saw this in almost all the measurements in the sanctuary, and as you saw in the photograph, even at the altar, which was enlarged by about 1 foot, which is again exactly the difference between 5 small and 5 royal Egyptian cubits. And again we come back to the same book of Chronicles, the same chapter, 2 Chronicles 3:3. Now these are the foundations which Solomon laid for the building of the house of the God. The length by cubits after the first measure was 3 cubits, and the breadth 20 cubits. So our sanctuary at Arad, surprisingly enough, from north to south, was exactly 20 cubits as the Solomonic Temple in Jerusalem. But it was, in Jerusalem at least, after the first measure, Lefi Hamida HaRishonah. What means that? Again, of course, commentators were asking themselves long, what is this first measure in which the Solomonic Temple in Jerusalem was built and measured? I think at Arad we have it now quite clearly and obviously. The standard of the cubit was changed between the 10th and 9th century. Our sanctuary at Arad was destroyed, rebuilt according to the new standard. This was probably a quite important change of standard. If not, they wouldn't have changed it like this. While the Solomonic Temple in Jerusalem, of course, stood intact, was as it was built, and therefore he had rightly to add, if you measure it, it is too small. It was built 60 cubits according to the first measure. You may ask, of course, well, the Solomonic Temple is 20 to 60, the 240, the Heichal. Our is 20 to 6 cubits. And here we have another quite strange fact, that 20 to 6 are the proportion of the biblical tabernacle, this desert sanctuary. And again, it's impossible for me to go into the questions, what means the description of the desert sanctuary in the Bible? Thought by many scholars to be comparatively late, molded in the picture of the Solomonic Jerusalem, a temple. Now, it is very strange, truly, the measurements of the tabernacle, which in the biblical description was a movable sanctuary made of wood and stuff and made of boards. And in the description, every board is 1.5 cubit broad. And it was built by 26 boards, overlaying, according to the biblical description, with some tenons or tongs. So usually in the encyclopedia, you find the measurements of 30 to 9, arguing that every board is 1.5 cubit long. But we must ask ourselves, what is with these overlaying tongs? Is this not perhaps 0.5 cubit, which was overlaying one board above the other, and then you would have exactly, as we have in Arad, 20 to 6 cubits. And very surprisingly, I found this interpretation in the medieval Jewish commentator Rashi, which you perhaps happen to know. He came, of course, only on account of the biblical passage, he didn't know our sanctuary at Arad, to the conclusion that the measurements of the tabernacle were 20 to 6 cubits, and each board overlaying one upon the other 0.5 cubit. Well, I would say all these, of course, similarities and dissimilarities with the tabernacle, with the Solomonic temple, are very interesting questions. I won't dwell any further on them, and I'm sure that a lot of scholars have to say something about all of these questions. And I want only briefly and at least ask the most important question, perhaps, for all religion and for the biblical scholar. What was at all the reason for the building of this sanctuary just as Arad? As I said in the beginning, if we would look at many and any place and ask ourselves where we would at least perhaps hope or wait for a sanctuary in this period to be built, one of the last places, I think, would be Arad. And by trying to give this question, I, of course, was asking myself, what is the main feature of this place at Arad? What was its importance in the Old Testament period, in the period of the monarchy? And so clearly, we mentioned this in our first lecture, Arad is on the border. It is a royal fortress, dominating, of course, a very important route, high route, leading to Edom and to the Gulf of Elat, and it stands off the border, on the southeastern border of first Israel and then Judah. And interestingly enough, if we look into the Bible and ask ourselves, where do we have any allusions in the Bible, any hints of sanctuaries built beside Jerusalem in any place in Israel and Judah? So we have, of course, first these two sanctuaries built by Jeroboam after the division of the kingdom, one in Dan in the north and one in Bethel in the south. Both places are exactly at Arad, just on the border of Israel, royal fortresses on the border of Israel, one in the north and one in the south. But we have still other indications, mainly by Amos, the prophet Amos, who speaks, for instance, in one passage in 5:5, but seek not Bethel, nor enter into Gilgal, and pass not to Beersheba, Beersheba, as you pronounce it in English, I suppose. Or in 8:14, they that swear by the sin of Samaria, and say at thy God Odan liveth, and as the way of Beersheba liveth. So Amos speaks in the same language on the sin, on the sanctuaries, of Dan, Bethel, Gilgal, and Beersheba. All these places on the border, on the very border of the kingdom. And therefore, of course, I was asking myself, if we have here not a phenomenon of royal border sanctuaries, built beside the main sanctuary in the capital, in Jerusalem or in Samaria, symbolizing the kingdom, the rule of God over the country, for people leaving, for people entering, demonstrating and symbolizing the border of the kingdom. And we could, of course, quite a lot of similar features bring from other historical situations in other countries. But as I mentioned already, we have another interesting and strange feature, that our last sanctuary of the 7th century, as we have it, as far as we could check this in Arad, was without an altar. And I ask, what is this strange thing? How can we explain this? If there was a sanctuary temple in Arad, how did it function without this main feature of the altar for burnt offerings? And I just recently came here to a very interesting passage in the prophet Isaiah. Isaiah 19, his burden against Egypt, where he speaks first about the sins of Egypt and prophesies the destruction of Egypt. And then at the end of this prophecy, and this end of the prophecy is by many commentators again thought to belong to later periods and not to belong to Isaiah, he speaks on the latest day when Egypt will return and will get on itself the true worship of the God of Judah, as he speaks, and will even speak the language of Canaan, Hebrew. That means he gives a really, I would say, utopic vision of even Egypt taking on itself the true worship of God and therefore be redeemed and saved. And here in Isaiah 19:19, he says, in that day shall there be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar, a matzevah, at the border thereof to the Lord. And again, a commentator was asking them, what does that mean? An altar just in the midst, in the capital, and a matzevah, this holy feature of any true Hebrew sanctuary up to at least the later days, at the border, just at the border of Egypt. And some scholars try to explain it in Egyptian features of Egyptian monoliths symbolizing the border, things like this. But Isaiah is not speaking on Egyptian worship. He is saying that in these days Egypt will take on itself the true worship of God as it is in Judah. And we are asking ourselves, isn't this not the picture in Isaiah's, Hezekiah's day in Judah of an altar, of a central sanctuary, only in the midst of the country in Jerusalem, but still a matzevah, a border sanctuary at the borders of the country? And he goes on and speaks in verse 21, and the Egyptians shall know the Lord in that day, yea, they shall worship with sacrifice and oblation, I would say at the midst of the country at the altar, and shall vow a vow unto the Lord at the matzevah, which we have probably to think as its main function. And I would think that this may also be the difference and may be us lead us best to true understanding of this centralization of worship and the two stages of centralization, first during the period of Hezekiah, and the second time during the period of Josiah, which the scholars are often ask themselves, what happened here? Twice the same thing. It at least looks now, according to Arad, evidently probably not just the same thing, but I think we can now point to two stages in the centralization of the worship of the temple and of the offerings in Jerusalem. Only in the second Josiah stage, our sanctuary at Arad was as you have seen, destroyed and nullified completely, while in the first stage, probably Hezekiah, only the offering at the altar in Arad, it looks, was abolished. And really, I should finish my lecture here, but I have to, one more moment. When I was in my last lecture here on Tuesday, we looked a bit together in the library, and I was asking myself always one thing. If we have here a phenomenon of border sanctuaries, so Arad on the Edomite border, Beersheba on the Egypt border, Beth El, of course, on the Judean border, and so on and so on. But where was the sanctuary on the Philistine border? If this is true, then in, let's say, the main border fortress, or main border city on the Philistine border, there should be, if this thing is correct, also a sanctuary of this tribe, of this type. And what is the main fortress, Judean fortress, or stronghold, on the Philistine border, if not Lachish? Yes, the great and famous stronghold of Lachish. Now let's please look into one last slide, if it is not too difficult again to put out the light for a moment. And look, please, into the so-called solar shrine found in the excavation at Lachish. Well, please look at it. The courtyard, I suppose something is missing here, it is the last phase destroyed. Look here at the Heichal. Look here at the Dvir. I would look at the direction. This is the north, the sanctuary pointing to the west. I would say even for the first moment, I never have seen two so similar plans of sanctuary as this plan of the sanctuary at Lachish with our plan at the sanctuary of the sanctuary of Arad. At Lachish they call it solar shrine because they believe that somehow the sun came here from the east. They have no evidence for this. They even write in the report that they have no true evidence for the date. They believe it to be Persian, but have no true evidence for this. And I wouldn't blame neither Starkey nor Olga Tufnell nor anybody else. They couldn't take even into their consideration the possibility that we have here in this building at Lachish, Israeli sanctuary from the period of the monarchy. But I must say, by seeing this now and comparing this, at least I am asking the question now much more strongly than I would do it before, if this is not the type and if these are not these sanctuaries on the borders all around the kingdom in the first temple period. Thank you.